Welcome to the Art Burrito Podcast with Jason Wilkins. Life, art, marketing, and all the deliciousness in between. Here we go.
Oh, he's having a shower.
Okay, we're live.
Oh, stop focusing, Michelle, on all the stuff on all the walls.
No, that's okay.
Stay focused, Michelle.
No, that's good. So this is episode 11, which is crazy because like we were just talking about, I think I just started this 2 months ago. So episode 11, the Art Burrito Podcast, sponsored by Publican House. So now this is where we can crack it open.
Is it going to wreck my nails?
Yep. There we go.
I'm drinking a peach sour, Publican House Brewery, Peterborough, Ontario.
Yep. And I've got the house ale. Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, that was really loud.
And then they got to listen to us. It's like us eating. Why don't we have a bite to eat too? Publican House, why don't you bring over your nachos? And
I know, right?
Yeah.
So everybody, Michelle Frary's on the show today. So welcome. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
You're super busy.
I'm totally fangirling over your ability to podcast because I really need to start doing this. So
you do. And actually, before you came, I was thinking like, I don't know why she's not already doing that. It just seems like natural. Like that's something that you would do.
And it's like, for some reason, I don't know what I'm doing or I don't know. So you're the universe saying, Michelle, be more like Jason.
Yeah. No, I didn't want to do it because it makes me really uncomfortable. And then usually that's how I do things anyway. So if something scares the shit out of me, then I'll try it. And if I don't want to do it, actually, I shouldn't say that. It doesn't apply to all areas of my life. Like roller coasters, I've never tried and I will not try. Never.
I don't really feel like you're missing out on that.
No.
Like, I don't really feel like that's going to bring value to your life.
My wife is really, she makes fun of me constantly about it. And I just won't do it. I don't care. The pressure doesn't get to me. I'm not doing it.
That's a hard line for you. That's what we call in a relationship.
No.
That's a hard line.
It is a hard line.
I'm not negotiating this.
No, forget it.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't even care. No. So yes, podcast, because as we know, voice is the next thing. So you should do it. I mean, like you said, you've got experience. You've done tons of stuff.
Well, yeah, I did voices, obviously, when I was a reporter. Like that's what we had to do every day. You'd go in, you shot your video, you went in, and then you had to voice your story to go along with it. Mm-hmm. I never did radio, like most people, because I never went to school for radio, television, broadcasting, but I've been on the radio, but it's just like, for some reason I get intimidated and everybody's like, what? You do video. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. That's why I thought, oh, maybe she's already got something in the works. I just don't know about, but yeah.
If you want to operate that for me, or if anybody's listening and they just want to do that all for me, it's also time.
It is time.
But I'd love to take like my Parking with MF interviews and just put them as podcasts.
Oh my God. That'd be perfect.
Well, so many people just, you can't always watch things, right? And you're driving. Like, so for me, a podcast is when I'm running or when you're driving.
Yes.
And I love it because you can really like feel it too, right?
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, that's what passes time. Like if I'm at the gym or whatever, that's what I'll do. Music actually doesn't do it for me anymore when I'm working out. It's like I have to be somewhat engaged, like what I'm listening to. So
it's funny you say that. I don't know if it's age, but it's like a podcast for some reason motivates me.
Yeah.
More like I can actually pace myself better.
Yeah.
I'm not a fast runner by any means. I'm like probably run as fast as most people walk.
Yeah.
But I have to pace myself in a podcast for some reason. Because if I listen to really exciting music, I'm like, and then I'm out of breath and I'm like, oh, I'm dying. Whereas the podcast, it seems to level me out.
Yeah. See, I don't even run on the treadmill. All I do when I go to the gym is treadmill and then maybe some weights, but like, I don't even run on the treadmill. I'm the only guy, like if you go up and down, if you watch people go up and down the treadmill, everyone's like, oh, you know, like huffing and puffing. Actually, one guy next to me the other day, I don't know what he was doing. He was like going super fast for like 5 minutes and I thought he was going to die. So I'm like, I don't really want to do that. So I just kind of like, I just kind of walk really fast.
There's another hard line. Yeah. Jason Wilkins' life.
I don't run.
I'm not negotiating.
No, I'll go to the gym, but I'm not going to work out. No, I just walk really fast, whatever. And then I get to a certain amount of calories and then I'm like, okay, bye.
Well, there's all kinds of research now that kind of states you don't have to sweat to that like extreme version to get the same kind of workout, right? And so walking can have the exact same impact, like effects with less impact if you're, you know, have sore joints and all that. And for a lot of people, it's more enjoyable. I love running because I escape my brain.
Yeah.
So I'm the guy that was running like 5 minutes. That's me running away from my problems. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. No, I like, because I used to do it when I lived in Toronto and we lived near the beach. I would run up and down the boardwalk. And that for me was a little better because I had stuff to look at, like, you know, nice, you know, see the lake and stuff. But yeah, if I'm staring at a wall or like, I don't know. Yeah.
It's treadmill.
We all have our own thing. For
sure. But treadmill running is like torture. Yeah. Like running in itself isn't super fun.
Yeah.
But treadmill running is the worst.
It is pretty bad.
You have to do intervals to make it go.
Yeah. So what are you doing? What's going on lately? Like, what are you up to?
Oh, I was just sitting around eating bonbons. Cool. Sort of like watching Young on the Restless, General Hospital. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like my everyday.
Yeah. That's cool.
Like,
yeah.
Just sit around.
That works sometimes.
I don't know. I love to be busy. I love to work. And I hate saying I'm so busy. Like, I don't like that answer either because I like it. So people have this, like, it's like a contest, like who's busy. Or people will say to me, you're so busy. I don't want to bother you. I'm like, everybody's busy. Every single person I know is busy and it's relative to what's going on in your life.
I get that too. I'm like, wow, it looks like you have a lot going on. You must be really busy. I'm like,
and I almost think it's just like a default conversation.
I think so. Yeah.
It's kind of like, the weather.
Yeah.
Like small talk.
Exactly. Yeah. I never know. Same here. I never know what to say. It's kind of just like, yep. Busy.
It's like, how are you? Do you really want to know? Sit down.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I'll say, it's good to be busy. Like, what does that even mean? Oh, it's good to be busy. Like you said, everyone in some capacity right now is busy.
That, and then what you'll start to see is a trend, which I'm starting to see. It's like, take a day to yourself, meditate, self-care. Yeah. Everybody take a day off. We need to chill. You know, so it just is like something gets really, really trendy and everybody latches on. And then they're like, okay, we got to switch gears. Okay, now we're going to like chill out and go to like. I just find it's like the natural curvature of life and habits.
Yeah.
And like whatever's kind of grabbing on and whatever people of influence are kind of doing. It's like, I'm going to try that.
Yeah, exactly. I even caught myself doing that. Who was it? I think it's actually even Joe Rogan who does some meditating. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll try to meditate. I actually tried. I downloaded this app that he's promoting. I'm like, I don't know. I just can't get in the, I guess you have to really commit to it to make it work.
I have mixed views on meditation because my brain for me, and this is, comes back into like, I do a lot of self-reg work as well. And it's, everybody's wired a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. And so meditation comes in different forms for people. So for me, like running on that treadmill and like exasperating myself like that, that's actually calming. It actually calms me. So in some people, they just want to lay still and like lay there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no,
like
I need movement. That's why one of the reasons why I love to drive because I'm moving. So I think, I need movement to like almost rest my mind.
Same here. It took me a long time to get there with working out because before it became habit, I was like, oh God, like all I would think about while I was working out was I don't want to do this anymore.
I can't wait for this to be over.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm done. I don't want to do it anymore. And then you get to a point where you sort of enjoy it. And then you start seeing, you know, some results and you're like, oh, okay. And then your mind does start to wander. And then that's when you pick up, like, that's when I started picking up podcasts while I was working out.
You need to change it. And I just actually, it's funny. I did a Monday motivation post. I do Monday motivation post every Monday. Imagine that. That's so weird. And I actually spoke about this because I'm trying to, my one kid right now, he's like, I hate school. And
you're same here.
And I said, you have to start like giving your brain attention to what you want, like instead of what you don't want. And so for me, it's the result.
Mm-hmm.
And so my brain, like I know how I feel when I don't work out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it used to be about being skinny and it used to be about, I want this body and I want to look like this. And now it's completely like that mental health component because I actually know 2 days, if I don't do some kind of release of that energy, probably like you, we're creative minds. We have high energy. Mm-hmm. We have a lot going on in there. We're probably beta brains or whatever you want to call it. I have to get rid of it. And if I don't, I'm miserable.
Yeah.
Like, and so it's not just necessarily like, I'm not a fitness coach, but I just need some kind of exercise that gets rid of that.
Yes. Yeah.
And then that makes it motivating because I know how I feel after.
Yeah. That's the whole thing. Like you always regret, what's the saying? It's something like basically you won't regret doing it.
No.
You regret not doing it. And then So yeah, when you're doing it and you're getting into the groove, it's like, oh, this sucks. But yeah, 100%. You feel it after, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Or it's like eating that like impulsive eating.
Yep.
Right. I'm an emotional eater. It's like, I'm just going to eat this bag of Chicago mix because I really want it.
Yeah.
That's poor planning. Yes. That's poor planning, because if I had fed myself good food, I wouldn't be so vulnerable to just stick my hand in there and be like, ah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine was pasta forever. Like I just love it so much. And I haven't had pasta in a long time now. And it's funny when you start seeing results, then those things don't become so important, right? So that's kind of what's happened.
And there's the balance in there too, right? It's like deprivation is not the way to go either, because then you just want it more.
No.
Right? So it's that healthy balance of like, okay, well, I'll do it one day. Yeah. Or
Tim Hortons breakfast sandwich for me. Okay. No lie. Probably almost every morning.
Okay. But what kind of, do you have like the biscuit?
The sausage and egg with English muffin.
The English muffin.
So it's slightly less calories. It's like 430 calories, not 550.
I've never counted calories.
That's the only way it works for me.
And see, everybody's so different.
Calorie deficit, yeah.
So did you always have like an issue with body? Like, have you struggled with body image?
No, it's like I just started noticing, like, so I've lost about 25 pounds in the last 5 months.
I noticed as soon as I saw you.
So what it was more when Callie came along, she's just turned 3. And I was saying this to a bunch of people, like, I just don't want to be like this old fucker, like trying to run after her, like trying to be like, I can't, you know, cause I'm going to be when she's 13, I'm going to be 52. So like, I'm hoping to be in decent shape when I'm 52. So I just saw the future. I was like, oh God, something's got to give.
It's got to be that motivation. I really feel like if you take care of yourself and put in a vested interest in your health and wellness, like it's so much more than like abs and what you look like. It's so much more than that.
So much more.
That's what you're thinking is at 2019.
Yeah.
You take care of yourself.
Yeah.
You're role modeling for your kids, but you're also role modeling for yourself and creating those healthy habits.
Yeah.
I think it's one of my biggest.
Yeah.
Preaches like, so like, get me off my soapbox about it, because I just feel like it's like the most important habit you can develop for success in business owner, like in anything that you're doing in life.
Spills over everywhere.
It does.
I'm way more creative when I feel good about myself. And then also when, the key was when I would tuck her in at night and like you're doing the like 45 minute tuck in, like read me 8 books.
You mean the 8-hour tuck in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you're down like on your hands and knees, like, you know, doing your thing. And then I found it at one point I was trying to, you know, you're getting up, you're like, you're done. And I'm like, Oh my God, like my lower back and then just everything, you just feel like crap. So that's what it was. And then I was like, okay, this is no longer going to work for me. So that's what it took for me.
Like, now, does your partner support you?
Oh, she's awesome. She's doing those HIIT classes.
Do feel like that's a key component in the success ratio, because I just did a vlog on this too.
Yeah.
One partner all of a sudden decides, listen, I want to make a change. I want to do things. And the other one's like, well, what are you doing that for? And that you sabotage each other. Like you have to really support each other.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a big, big divide in a couple. If one person's like, I'm going to eat healthy. And the other person's like, I'm not.
We're both on board with it. We're both on board with pizza night still. We're both on board with, you know, healthy dinners. Like it's a good mix. Like you have to, this the only way that it'll last for me is if I have that, I can mix it up with food. I tried to go vegan. I went vegan for 6 months. I think it was the time, it was like when I was working at Birch Park. And then I hit I felt like I hit a literal wall where I was like, oh my God, this stuff's making me sick. I can't do it anymore. It was just my body just saying, I can't, that's not for you anymore. And so I've tried stuff just to see what would work. And yeah.
It's balance.
Yeah.
It's a long game. Anything that's a fad, right? That's why I struggle a little bit with keto and all these things. And I get they're a nice kickstart, right? Because when I had my first daughter, I went on like at the time it was South Beach Diet. And it helped. I lost weight like really quickly, really fast. But if you don't maintain some kind of balance, you'll just gain it back and then some. Because eating is all emotional. It's all mental anyway.
Oh, it's all mental.
And when I go through emotional times in my life, the first thing I turn to, thank you, Doritos. Thank you, Butter Tarts, right? It's the first thing I do.
Well, my crutch was wine. Yeah. So red wine. And I posted about this a little while ago. I was like, I was drinking a lot at night, and I realized it actually was my wife. She's like, you're probably on your like third glass of wine. And this would go on consistently, like for like weeks, like every day. So I would go through one of those big bottles, you know, in like 2 days. Mm-hmm. So basically you're drinking a bottle a night and you don't realize it. You're just drinking and it's just going down like water,
yeah,
which is another problem. So you're like, oh, this, I don't even taste this anymore.
So I moved on to Publican House beer.
Yep, that's right. They're the best. I'll still drink and I still like to go out and drink socially, but my wife doesn't drink. So I was drinking alone too. So you're just like, yeah, okay. That was another thing. So that went, I don't drink wine anymore.
Well, the biggest thing alcohol does, and there's a huge movement right now for people pulling away on alcohol.
I saw a post about that, about the mom, how it was okay for so long. And now it's like, out of control.
Well, there was a lot of glamour around that sort of alcohol situation, but Mark Wahlberg, I don't know if you follow him. Yeah. Take a sip of your beer. Mm. Mark Wahlberg, do you follow him on Instagram?
Mm.
So he's off, I think he's off, it's like 60 days or something without alcohol.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I'm actually just feel like I'm developing a healthy relationship with alcohol.
That's more what it is for me.
Because like I never would have a drink. I would like go to drink to get drunk. Like I was a binge drinker.
Yes.
So I would never sit down and have a drink with a meal.
Yes.
Ever.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, I'm going to have a glass of wine.
Yep.
And it's like, I'm actually enjoying this. So it's, again, it's mm-hmm. those balances, right? It's all the same.
Yeah. We had people over for Callie's birthday. My mom brought some wine. And so I had a couple glasses and then it's been sitting around the house. Right. And I'm like, oh, this stuff's still sitting here. That's crazy. So I did last night. I had a glass of wine and that was it. So I guess you just train yourself too, right?
Takes 28 days to develop a habit.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Something in and around there.
Yeah, 28 painful days.
Yeah. Of changing, right? Of changing the pattern in the brain. Yes,
100%. Mm-hmm. So usually when I start the podcast, I like to go back. So like have people talk about like sort of their origin story kind of thing. I want to go like further back with you because I want to know what you were like as a kid. Because mm-hmm. I don't usually go that far back. Because you have like this kind of spirit about you. So what were you like as a kid? And then you can kind of move forward a bit if you want.
I feel like we should bring in my mom for that. Because I'm sure my memory of me as a child is maybe different than others. Mm-hmm. But I was very, very shy. I was pretty introverted.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty standoffish kid.
Mm-hmm.
I like to sit in the corner and watch everything. I didn't smile. I was like kind of grumpy, I think. But very leadership was definitely there.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do it this way and only this way.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a lot of friends, I wouldn't say. It's funny because I feel like in high school, I think I was a really, really, really big loser. And when I ask people I went and I did this one time, I'm like, how did you think I was? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. Meanwhile, I switched schools and people are like, oh, I never even know you left. I'm like, yeah, that sounds more about right. Because people didn't even know who I was. So I don't know. I think I was really shy. I was pretty reserved.
Yeah.
I think does that surprise you?
A little bit. Yeah. I kind of thought, yeah, I didn't really see that. Where did it kind of take its turn then? I mean, I guess to a certain respect, you still are a little bit. I mean, I see you like out doing the things you do, but I don't imagine that you're on like all the time like that, right? Maybe.
I don't know. I feel like I'm pretty much the same person.
Yeah.
I don't surround myself. Like I'm not a huge social person.
Okay.
Like I'm not a huge, like, let's go to a big party.
Gotcha.
I'm not really that person.
Yeah.
When I was 16, I went to a theater guild production. It was my first theater thing. And I watched it and I was like, I want to do that. I want to be on the stage. And sort of silently told myself that and never told anyone else that. And just lived with that. Like I was just like, I know I can. I know I can. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I am in my head. Like I'm like, I know what I can accomplish. And I don't sometimes say it out loud. I just make that kind of commitment to myself internally.
I can relate to that for sure.
And so when I was 19, I tried out for a St. James Players. I went to my friend at the time and I said, this is like what I want to do, but I don't know how to sing. And it was a musical. And she said, okay, well, we'll give you a couple musical lessons. And so I went with them and sang a little bit and went to my audition. It was like the most nerve-wracking thing ever, like to walk in there and to feel like you definitely didn't belong in there. Like, who am I to go in there? Which is, like, I mean, that's now as a 40-year-old, I'm like, that's what stops us from doing anything because you think you don't belong somewhere, which is total nonsense. What sets you apart from anyone? Mm-hmm. And I went in and auditioned and I sang The Little Mermaid and they gave me a lead. And I was like, wow. Yeah. And so that was really the beginning of performing, I guess. So I was 20. I was 20 at the time. And then I started working with TV Kojiko and doing movie reviews. The camera is a lot easier to work with in a lot of ways because it's not people.
Yeah.
So you'll actually find a lot of people who are on camera they're actually not super comfortable in front of crowds.
Yeah, that's funny to me because I would picture the people watching. Like if I saw I was on checks a couple times, I think, for something. But I was like super nervous because you just picture like who's watching and people behind there like staring. But I guess if you look at the camera as just a thing and you can speak to that thing, then that's different.
So I like both because I love theater. But a lot of people in television are not like, they were like, I'm not going to MC that. There's a bunch of people there. I'm like, you're talking to thousands of people every day. They don't see it like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you remember going into checks, you're just, it's like a vacant little space, right? It's like kind of like what we're doing right now. Like, it's just you and me and there's a microphone. But, I love theater. I think theater is amazing because I love feedback. So I feed off of energy, right? So I have a lot better connection when we can have like a bit of volleyball where I can be like, oh yeah, yeah. I'll talk about, you know, wine, beer. And it's a natural kind of organic conversation. But theater is so much more work. It is so much more work. So like you go and you practice for like months and months and months, and then you go on stage for a week. Whereas the video, I always say like, I'm like, it's lazier. Right. In a lot of ways, because it's just like, now there's tons of YouTube stars and stuff that put a lot of production into their stuff and they edit and they do a lot of work too. So I don't want to take that away from them, but yeah. So then that is kind of how I transitioned into that space. And I think I probably have always liked being in control. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably a lot of the attraction to that.
Yeah.
Where you have the microphone, right?
Yes.
It's like everyone's like, don't give Michelle the microphone. Oh God. Right. So I think that would, if I was to really psychoanalyze myself, I'm sure that's probably half of the draw. But then I also really felt like a lot of people didn't have a voice. And so when I'm doing this, it's like, I want people to walk away and know there are other options. I feel like we live in a world and if you're only told one thing, that's all you know. And I feel like there's such a big, big, big world. And so I hope with the video content that I'm creating, it's not about me. Nothing is ever about you. It's about how you see yourself in that, right?
Yeah.
That's what behavior is.
Yeah. Did you have a lot of family support when, whatever you did, whatever you decided to do?
Yeah. My family's pretty amazing. So even when I was on checks, like every night after I did a live cast on my way home, I would phone my family and I would say, how did I do? Like I always, always critique myself still to this day. I watch everything back and I'm like, I should have said this better. I should have done this better. When I started at checks, I would go to, when I started my news, I would go to my news director every night and I would make him watch it. And he would just roll his eyes at me. He's like, oh, Michelle, I'm like, I need you to tell me what I did wrong. And I need you to tell me what I can do better. Mm-hmm. So I always have had that. I'm very, I say, critical of myself.
As a creative, I think that's kind of what happens too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And always striving to be better than the last.
So you always got honest feedback from family too.
Yeah. My family was really, they're really good like that.
Yeah.
Like they're they're a lot like I am. We're brutally honest in a lot of ways too. When I went out on my own business though, there was some pushback. Like there was fear from my parents. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you leaving a job? Like, you know, this is entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. That's a big leap, right? And that you're leaving security and perceived, like in the world of TV, like it was perceived status, right? Like, what are you doing? Now you're just going to go be a vlogger, which I hate that word, but you know, they didn't understand what I did. Yeah. So I think there was a bit of pushback that way. And sometimes there are people that are really, really close to you. You've probably experienced this, maybe not, but who don't, they don't support you.
Yeah. Like you, my family's awesome. So I've always known kind of from day one, like what I wanted to do because mm-hmm. I just gravitated towards art ever since
I can't tell.
Ever since I was a kid. So, but my mom was, and she still is brutally honest. So even as a kid, like I'd draw something and show her, she was, oh my God, that's really great. And then 2 days later, come back to her with maybe something slightly worse. No, you did way better before. Like you can do better than that. So I always had that too.
You've got all these people watching like, what a horrible mother.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I've done a whole bunch of work with child psychiatrists on praising children. And you're never supposed to give children praise. You're supposed to give them like that. Because when you pray, they keep searching for that.
Which is a
dangerous thing too.
Yeah. For my daughter, because she's in the arts program now at Thomas A. Stewart. And I feel like I'm back in time. So she'll say the same thing to me. Like, what do you think of this? And I just hear my mom in the back of my head. Like, and I'll just say, no, like, you know, it's, you didn't do it. Like the last one you did was way better. And then for the first while I would get like, dad, like, come on, dad. I'm like, no, I said, you asked my opinion. What do you think is going to happen? Like, especially if she wants to better herself as an artist, I said, you know, like, these are things that you need to learn.
I think one of the most powerful things you can say back to is, what do you think?
Yeah, that's always a good one.
It's a huge one, right? Because like, what do you think of that? What do you like about it? What would you do differently?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then that really changes that script
in a
lot of ways.
I don't pull that one often. That's a good one.
It's hugely valuable because then they're not, if we live a life where we search for others' approval, we will constantly be disappointed. Mm-hmm. But if we live a life where we actually are doing the best of what we want, then we can really keep moving forward and not be stalled by worrying about others' opinions.
Do you keep blinders on a lot of the time? Like when you do things?
Yes.
Okay. So do I.
Yeah.
I've even gone as far as I'll follow like a few artists that are like top of their game and then everyone else I don't pay attention to. So I don't necessarily measure myself against those people, but I see what they're doing.
You're inspired by them.
Inspired.
Big difference.
Right. But I find that I get too distracted if I have other things like I'm looking at. So I just decided, okay, like for social media, that's what I'm going to do. And then when I'm in the studio, I just do my own thing. So yeah, same here. Blinders usually work better for me, I think.
I do. And not being in competition with anyone, but having a healthy appreciation of knowing that you constantly have to be in a state of flux and movement, right? And you can't get complacent. And sort of watching the industry, but not being jealous or envious of other people's success. It's huge.
That is huge. Yeah. Artists are bad like that. Like especially illustrators and like visual artists. I find a lot. There's a few Facebook pages I'm on where people post their art and there's like mini competitions. I just don't have time to do it, but I love that kind of stuff where it's like, you know, healthy competition. People are putting up their work, you know, giving honest feedback and that kind of stuff's really cool. But there's a lot out there for sure where it's, you know, what do you think you're doing? Like, that was going to be one of my questions, but do you, being like a public figure, do you, when there's comments and when there's stuff, do you get any negativity that comes through the pipes?
Is that a joke?
Yeah. Oh, there's, yeah. Behind you, the people are nodding behind you. Yep. So what do you do then? How do you deal with that? Do you internalize any of it or do you just kind of?
So I think this is really critical because you're always, in order to understand behavior, we have to look at the why, right? So why is somebody behaving that way? And if it's coming from a place of honesty, so the reason your mother was probably okay with you was because you knew regardless she loved and supported you. So it's a lot easier to take that constructive feedback, right?
Yes.
Because 100%. there's a relationship there. Mm-hmm. So when you have people online who are quick to analyze, judge, or attack you, you have to step back and say, okay, what is this coming from? And you have to keep yourself in check. When you're a person of influence or a person of power, you can't dismiss everything. You have to look at it from a critical eye. And sometimes their approach is completely wrong and offside, and they're, you know, using the wrong way to approach you, but they could be having a meaningful message underneath that you can learn from and improve how you deliver.
Mm-hmm. One sec. We're going to cut there and... Okay, we're back. So continue. Sorry.
I don't remember what I was saying.
Well, we were saying, see, that's the thing about the, anyway, you do have people out there who give you, who throw negative shit at you, right?
Yeah. Oh, and you know what? If I didn't, then I'm not doing a very good job. You need to have challenges. You need to have people challenge you. If you have, you know, absolute power and I don't put stuff out there for everybody to be like, Michelle, you're the best. Oh my gosh, you're the best. That's not what I'm trying to achieve. My goal is for you to critically think. And so who am I? I'm presenting one side or a perspective that I have through my experience, but that doesn't mean that it's the only way. There are 300 million ways to achieve the same thing. So we have to keep an open mind, but when people get, and you have to be able to filter out sort of hate, all hate is somebody else projecting their own self-worth, right?
Yeah,
so that's somebody
sad.
Who's hurting, right?
Yeah.
So once you understand all of that, it's a lot easier to let it roll with you and sort of say, you know, I'm sorry. I'm not sure what happened with you, but, and filter out that. And then you can actually often use it as content moving forward, because everybody sort of has this different lens. And that's what makes human behavior so damn fascinating.
Yeah, isn't that weird? I always figure common sense is common sense when it's not. Like there is, I feel like now.
But what's your common sense
that's
based
right.
on?
There is no common, like exactly. Everyone, like you said, everyone sees things through a different lens. So that lens could be like people, like you said, people throwing these hateful things your way and it doesn't make any sense to you. But to them, it's like, yeah, it's sad. And they're, like you said, they must be hurting in some way or another.
Social media has created loss of context and tone. So you and I could have a conversation here right now and we disagree, but our body language, our tone, all of those things. And also I can't help but feel a little bit of compassion towards you because you're in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
When I have a machine in front of me to talk to you and there's no energy transfer,
yeah.
You lose that. And as a result, they are yearning for connection. And if they're going to get it through an online war, then they're still getting it.
Yeah.
So you have to look at, you have to really analyze. You have to, you're a human behaviorist at the end of the day is how you really have to look at social media.
Totally. Yeah. Do you talk to your kids a lot about social media? Cause I mean, that's kind of what you're...
Yeah. I mean, they understand pretty well what I do. It's ironic. My daughter, so I'm pretty serious about it. Like my daughter was 13. She wanted Instagram and I was like, you have to be a minimum 13, right? I wouldn't let my kids have it before then. And, I was really nervous that she was going to go and just post the craziest stuff. And she's done exactly the opposite. Like the girl posts an Instagram post once every, you know, month.
And same I'm with like, my daughter.
I'm like, now they Snapchat.
Yeah.
Like they have Tourette's. That was maybe offensive to people who have Tourette's, but you know what I'm trying to say?
Oh,
they
yeah.
just constantly Snapchat.
Yep.
But I think that's our role too as parents to really pay attention to how they're communicating and to not assume that they need to communicate the way we did.
Yeah. There's that level of trust too, right? Like if you give them that trust, you, like you said, you see what happens. We also, there's trust. And then on the flip side, we have that connection to her phone. Mm-hmm. So we can see what she's doing.
I don't have that. And yeah, I probably should.
Yeah.
How old is she?
She's 13.
Oh, okay. So when she was 13, I did. She's 15 now.
Okay.
And so I think it really sort of, it slowly faded.
Oh yeah, I think over the next for sure it would have to kind of stop after a certain point. Like, okay.
And we had the like old kind of like your high school lockdown where I'd be like, so there could be just any moment and any time I'm going to grab your phone and you have to show it to me and you don't know when it's going to be and I get to look at all of it.
Yeah.
So they live with that like
surprise.
Fear, right?
Yeah.
So, and it's like, if you are worried that I would find this on your phone, then it shouldn't be there.
Yeah. Probably shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Entrepreneurship was the next thing I kind of want to talk about. Like, do you feel like it's something that you're kind of like people are have to be born with, or do you think it's something that you can kind of take on? There's like mixed views on the whole thing. Because me personally, like I worked at jobs before, lots of jobs. But I always had that kind of like that gear where I was always doing my own stuff. And then I always had to put it out. There was just something that I felt like I had to do. So I don't know if like your take on is you went to like theater was your thing, but then it kind of evolved into what it is now. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which is you're an entrepreneur.
I definitely think there's a certain recipe
mm-hmm.
for an entrepreneur. And I think it's evident in children. Like if I look back at who I was, I mean, I have those ingredients for the recipe. I challenged constantly
mm-hmm.
In school, in jobs, constantly like innovating, constantly saying, why don't we do it like this? Have you not tried it like this? Those are all those ingredients. You're risk-taking, right?
Yeah.
You don't conform worth a shit.
Yeah.
It's hard for you. Like it's hard for you to conform.
Yeah. It's uncomfortable.
And,
it is.
And we can't have a world full of entrepreneurs and we can't have a world, full of conformists. We need that healthy balance. And I do think your environment plays a role, but I really think you're wired a certain way. Like I can look at my kids right now and if I had to make a bet, like I'm like my middle one probably isn't going to be one. It's just, you know, and yeah. My youngest one, he's either going to, you know, rule the world or blow it up. Like, and that's kind of what an entrepreneur is, right?
That's
And you look at the Gary V's of the world, they struggled. You know, I don't know if you follow Kat and Nat. They just did amazing Instagram post. It was my favorite one they've ever done. And they talked about how much they struggled in school. So if you have a kid who struggles in school, I would be one of my first things to tell you to be like, don't worry.
Yeah.
Don't worry. They're innovators. They're free spirits. They're going to make decisions. It's a nightmare to parent because all you want from your child for your child is for them to fit in. Like it's how we're wired. It's like what society tells us is supposed to be. Like we're failing as parents if our children aren't conforming or we're bad people. You're a bad child, right? Bad boy, good boy, good do as you're told.
Yeah, my youngest son is 17, and I saw him for the first time 2 days ago in over a year.
Oh wow!
So he, going through lots of stuff, staying with people, staying with friends. Didn't really have a place. Like. Doing continuing education, but then that goes through my brain, I think, because I know he's a smart guy,
but the system, you can tell him that all he wants, but the system has cracked his self-worth
mm-hmm.
because our society is based on that's your measurement tool for how smart you are, and it's flawed.
And then you think, like you said, then you start thinking, what am I doing wrong? Like he, you know, he's doing all this stuff, you know, like what happened? I mean, you know, my ex and I split. So then I was thinking, oh, I know that was hard on him. Maybe that's affected him now long term. Like you just, all these, your wheels start to turn. Like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? That's the only hope that I have is that it's kind of like, you know, maybe he's just figuring it out now. Like he's still so young. Maybe he's just sorting himself out. Maybe he needs that time. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to watch.
It's tough because we blame ourselves
mm-hmm.
and we play this what if game.
Yeah.
And it's so silly because our children are merely an extension of us, but they are not us. They are humans. If you were to like really pull back and get really philosophical here, they're just a bunch of cells.
Yeah.
Yeah, you made them and you donated your chromosomes to them.
Yeah.
But really, they're their own person. And so we can constantly are projecting what we want our children to be rather than the ability to like push away what we think they should be. And our society is set up for children who do not fit the system to be, it cracks their self-worth. It cracks who they think they are. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't fit into that system, your mom and dad can tell you you're smart till you're blue in the face. But if you go to school every day and they give you an F, you're being told you're a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that do?
Yeah.
So why would you try anything? Why would you even go out? What's your self-worth at? It's zero.
Yeah.
So you have to find what you're good at. And parents who have done this, you know, I think of one story, Cody Crowley, he's a local guy and his story is actually incredible because his mom saw that his passion and his drive was boxing. And she made a really hard decision in high school for that boy to really nurture that. And that's going against everything that you would be told as a mom, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
Like, no, you gotta go to school and you gotta do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are bound by the restrictions that society has put on us rather than thinking outside of that box because we only know what we know. You don't know what you don't know. And she nurtured that boy and he is now one of the best boxers in, the world, whatever he is. I mean, he's built a business around it. He's done incredible. Mm-hmm. It's his passion. It's his thing. Motivation comes from you finding something you care about. It doesn't come from somebody shoving something down your throat.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Well said for sure. Yeah. I think about that too. If we didn't have, or if I like you same page as me, as far as family support, if we didn't have that, you wonder how things would have shifted. Cause my family is a massive part of my life. So they would have had a major influence. So yeah, my mom was pissed, man. When I left art school and then went and worked at a call center for 10 years after art school, she was pissed. She's like, what are you doing? Like, you know what you need to be doing. Like, you know, but it was a means to an end. Like it was, you know.
But you needed that experience to know where you belonged.
Yeah.
You needed to experience.
Oh God, yeah.
It. Power of elimination is drive, gets you to where you need to be.
Yes. Oh God. Yeah, you working that for a decade, you realize what you never, ever want to do again, ever in your life.
The best thing you can do. The best thing you can do is do something you know you'll never do again.
Yeah.
You cross it off the list and it brings you closer to what you do want to do.
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking at my list of questions. I almost feel like we don't even need questions, but I'm going to ask another one. So, because I kind of want to keep going on the entrepreneur thing. Do you like the uncertainty end of entrepreneurship, or does it really scare you?
I feel like I don't feel like any entrepreneur likes it, but I feel like we're drawn to it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And
I always
so
like
I
to
feel
get,
like there's a paradox there.
Yeah. I always like to get people's view on that. Cause I always feel like I'm a little bit sick because like I like when things go really bad for a while. Not really bad. Like, I don't want it to be devastating or anything. But like if I have a down month and being a self-employed artist, it's very up and down. But I enjoy that part of it because then I know, okay, like you maybe were a little too relaxed for a period of time and you know, something went wrong and now you have to create something for yourself.
Tell me an entrepreneur, tell me a business owner who came up with a multi-million dollar plan or an invention when everything was amazing and they had money flowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No. Complacency, misery is the best form of innovation. You need to be cornered often.
Yeah.
And that is where it comes from. You need to be pushed. Right. If you know, if you mentally know there's money in the bank, you're like, well, I'm all right.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
That's what happens when I was saying this to someone before too. When I have a really good couple months, I almost get bummed. I'm like, this is supposed to be harder. Like, it's supposed to be like, you know.
And then it gets really hard.
And then it gets harder. Shit. Oh, I should have saved more money.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Innovation comes from a place I don't want to say desperation because that's not the right word, but you need to be struggling a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% agree. Mm-hmm. That's where my best stuff comes from.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you look for? How do you align yourselves with the companies that you work with? Like, do you see people out there in the community? You're like, I want to work with them. I'm going to approach them.
That's how I started. Okay. So I cherry picked everyone when I first went out on my own. Yeah. I was like, this is what I want to do. And this is how I want to work.
Yeah. I imagine a lot of people approach you now.
Now it's what we call magnetic marketing, right? Your vibe attracts your tribe type of thing.
Yeah.
And obviously it's like, your morals, your values, your character, what you want your messaging to be has to align with the company.
Yeah.
So it just kind of takes care of itself now.
Yeah. Has stuff come in and you're like,
Lots.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've turned down lots of stuff. Yeah. I'm like, how about no?
How about a big no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
my biggest, I guess, worth or whatever you want to call it is like, if I sell out, it's my name and my reputation, and it can be ruined in 1 second. So if I'm all of a sudden endorsing something that my viewers are like, what?
Yeah.
It compromises my value. It
makes them feel betrayed too, right?
Yes.
A little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then the Michelle Live and Show thing, which was really cool to watch, 'cause I watched the whole progression. Mm-hmm. Very neat. Where was that born from? Like, was that a decision, or what did it just kind of organically kind of happen?
All of the above, I guess. I always wanted to do a live talk show. I always used to sit around and be like, why, like, has nobody called me? Like, why doesn't, you know, Kelly, and like, why don't people know I'm just as talented as Kelly Ripa? Like, why doesn't people know I can do the Ellen Show? Why don't they know that?
Yeah.
Back. That's not how it works.
Yes.
And so I always wanted to do like a talk show that really let people escape. And so my partner, Ryan, who's in the room actually with us, Ryan Moore and I, we went to Archangel Summit. So I don't know if you've ever been to that.
No.
It's a really cool event. It's in Toronto. And we came back from that and I was like, we need to do a show. We can do this. And so then I had Brooke Wilkerson. She was kind of my springboard. We developed a really good relationship. She had a huge following. She's based out of Nashville, blogger.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of like went from like, you know, this idea here to, okay, this, and this, and this, and then assembling the people. It was all about the people who made it happen, right? So you have kind of an idea and then it's like, okay, well, we need to get a venue. Well, okay. Mike and Katya Skinner were like, yeah, we want to be the host for this. So that was awesome. Luke Belfry was like, yeah, we'll build you your set. I'm like, okay, this is amazing. Like it was, I remember stopping, we were at like a lunch one day and I just remember being like, all these people were at the table. And I'm like, that to me was the most valuable thing in the bank right there, to have people come to support a vision.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. It was so much work. And it's not done. I mean, we're now ramping up for the second season and it's, you know, trying to streamline things a little bit better.
That's great.
But it's a hustle. And actually we just had our sizzle reel. Rob Viscardis is doing our edit for it. And it's like, I just watched it before we got here and I was like, wow,
get chills.
That looks amazing. Yeah. Look at all the stuff we did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Went in a nice little 2-minute clip.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it was born out of, bringing people into a room. It was born out of a vision of bringing people together. No matter, I've interviewed thousands of people, and no matter what your socioeconomic status, no matter where you come from, we all share the same feelings. We are all dealing with something.
Yes.
And it's relative to your life.
Yes.
And so to bring us all into one room and to know that, because it's loneliness and isolation that drives you into a darkness, into a depression that makes you think you're bad. There's something wrong with you. You're failing. When in fact, there are so many people around you sharing the exact same feelings,
yes,
but nobody's talking.
Yeah. 100%. This is going to sound really lame. I just went to my first real concert like 2 weeks ago.
Cool. Who was it?
It was Our Lady Peace and Live and Bush.
Nice.
So they did like a somersault thing.
That's amazing.
So, we went and it was first time ever I had that experience where, I don't know, thousands of strangers in at Budweiser stage. It was the first, I get chills actually just now. And Our Lady Peace came up, and my wife, of course, loves Bush because Gavin, but they came up and then sang their first song. And I'm not one to dance, sing, zero. No. Especially not in public. It just comes over you like a wave. And you see everybody there, again, totally different people. Just like, you just feel this togetherness.
Energy is transferable. And you only get that when you put people in a room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what's happening with social media is we can't have that energy transfer anymore.
Yeah.
And we need to have it.
That was the reason why I started this, because you see people all the time on social media or quickly downtown here, but you don't ever get that connection. Like, you just don't get it, period. It doesn't matter what people say about social media. It serves its purpose, but yeah, you don't get that. That face-to-face, which is so important.
You need events.
Yeah. By the way, I went to stop you earlier, but so Luke from Belfry.
Yeah.
So I was good friends with his brother, Rob.
Yes.
When we were kids.
Yeah.
And Luke was this little shit. He used to run around. He used to run around their house, and he was Mr. High Energy. And Rob used to yell at him all the time. Luke, stop, stop. He would go. And I saw him on the street the other
That's
day.
That's a great story.
Across the street, I saw him. And I'm like, oh my God.
And look what Luke became.
Yeah, I feel super old. Because like, he's probably, honestly, I don't know, 6 years younger than me or something. I don't know. And I'm like, oh my God, that is hilarious.
Super successful entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Super successful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, comes back to that kid. Put him in a classroom. What's he going to do?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Yeah. I saw a couple of your posts, and you continue to post about it because he did your son's room.
He did. And yeah. He did an amazing job. Him and his wife, Jess. So Jess did the
I didn't know that. Like, she was part of it.
Yeah. So she's like the other half of the brilliance, right? Because she did all the, like, I'm not good at
that
decorating and stuff.
No, me neither.
She was amazing at that.
Yeah. Same
interior
here.
Design, basically. And they went and they met Marcello, and they got a sense for his
that is
personality,
awesome.
Right? But I think you could come over and you could have a heyday. You and Marcello could go Sharpie crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I taught a Sharpie class. And I'm like, now everybody take a Sharpie and go home and draw on your parents' walls. And their parents are like, man, probably not a good idea.
No.
What do you hope for your kids seeing what you're doing? Like, I always picture mine, because my daughter's been over here drawing, and my little one comes in and runs around, and she says, you know, daddy's going to work the color. And, you know, like they have this view of what you do as like, you know, it's cool. But long term, like my oldest son, who's 21 now, he's like, he finally gets it. He's like, wow, like, this is pretty cool that you get to do this for a living.
I think your parents are always just your parents.
Oh, right? For
I think
sure.
If you went and talked to the Rock's kids, he's my dad. He's not the Rock, he's my dad. And so for me, I want my kids to know that they were the reason for everything I did.
Mm-hmm.
I want my kids to know that my greatest legacy will be what they achieve in their life and their happiness.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Yeah. That's awesome. I always feel like that. I always feel like if it weren't for my kids, I would just sit at home and just like draw. I don't think, I'm not sure it would have ever developed into anything, because it is 100% why I do what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It all comes back to that. Of course, selfishly, being a creative person, it's your outlet. So you do it, but wanting more and doing more, it's 100% always comes back to the kids for sure.
You have to show your kids what's on the other side of fear too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think entrepreneurs are really good at that. And sometimes you think they're not paying attention and they're not listening because it just doesn't seem like it's clicking. And, you know, I think I did learn that from my parents. Like, when I look back at who I am as a result of living with the parents I had, I didn't know what I was learning until now, you know what I mean? And so I think my kids, you try to live the life you want them to live. And that is, you know what, do what you want to do and treat others well, right? Integrity, kindness. I got a beautiful text the other day. It made me like totally tear up. It was from a mom of my daughter. And she said, I just want to let you know, my daughter told me that, my daughter's name is Rosa. She said, my daughter just told me that Rosa said to her, no matter what happens with you, no matter who makes fun of you or anything went wrong, and there was drama, whatever, in high school, she said, I will always walk down the hall with you because you're my best friend. And I was like, wow. That is more important to me than academics, than you can't, that's not something that's on the report card. And so, you know, I made a point to tell her that, because we, if you want something, you want to see more of something in somebody, tell them. Right. Yes. But we fall into a trap. I feel like so often we really point out what we don't like. Yeah. We tell people what we don't want to see.
Yeah.
And we don't tell people what we do like and what we want to see more of.
Yes. Yeah. That is absolutely paramount, like across the board, just to be good humans. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. My 13-year-old, has some social anxiety. So
she's the only one. Nobody else has
nobody. Nobody. So, so she's had some issues like getting started going to high school. And, that's what I said to her. I'm like, be a good person, go in there as confident as you can be and good things will happen. I mean, and if they don't right away, then you work on it. And, so she literally just takes it day at a time. And then it's slowly getting.
Day's not bad. Usually with anxiety, it's 1 minute at a time.
Yeah. And it's getting, hopefully getting easier and easier, but it's, there's so many stories like that where there's like, people are afraid to even talk about it or say anything.
And yet we're all living with it.
Yeah. It's really shitty.
Yeah. And you have to overcome something to beat down the pattern.
Yeah.
So then you have to push them, which causes anxiety. It's just a really vicious cycle.
Yeah.
It's a stress cycle. It's very, very hard. It's very, very hard as a parent. And a child can't recognize anything you're saying because they don't have any experience to believe what you're saying. So the only thing that happens is what you've said. Once it happens to them, they go back and say, oh, you were right.
Yeah.
And in that moment, your voice means nothing because they don't believe you because they haven't experienced it.
That's exactly it. Yeah. You need that head on your shoulders for a little bit to really kind of get it. Yeah. Oh my God. It goes with everything. Mm-hmm. Telling your kids is, but
Don't touch the hot stove.
Like a million times.
Whatever.
A day.
Hot stove. Oh shit. Now I know what they were talking
about. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. I guess we'll wrap up soon, but I want to get kind of your advice on like anybody kind of looking to get into your field or, you know, some sort of advice to throw out there that you think might be helpful. Maybe even lessons you learned from early on.
No matter what you go to do in life, you're going to have good relationships with people. You can't do anything alone. It's a struggle sometimes for entrepreneurs or people who like to be in control.
Mm-hmm.
We have a hard time letting go.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing in people who you trust and support, and you have to follow what you want to do. If you're chasing money, it's never going to work.
Yeah.
That's never going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially as a creative,
but you have to build relationships and trust.
Mm-hmm.
It's the secret to success. You look at anybody who does anything, it's because they knew somebody who knew somebody. Well, you know somebody because you build a relationship. And building relationships is about talking to people when you don't need something. Connecting with people when you don't need something.
Yep.
Really asking how people are doing and giving a shit.
Yeah.
That is helping people and expecting nothing in return.
Yeah.
That is building relationships.
Yeah. I didn't really truly understand that until I was totally out on my own as an artist. So literally 100% on my own within a year or so. That's what I'm at. And, the first few months were tough because entirely by myself, you're just getting started. I felt like I was just getting started. You don't realize it. you don't realize how much you need other people, either just for emotional support. You just, people who wouldn't be there, right? It's super important.
Entrepreneurship is lonely.
It's very lonely. I'm a little better at it now, a little bit further in, but still, like, there's days where it's just like,
it's one of the things I miss the most. I miss that newsroom environment of talking to my friends.
Yeah.
A job is a job. It's the people you work with and the relationships you have within whatever it is you do.
Yeah.
That's what brings you back every day.
100%. Well, we're going to wrap it up, but I want to say thank you very much for coming on and taking the time. It was really good to see you again. Yeah, it's been a little while.
I need to bring my kid in and do an art lesson
with you. Yes, you do. There's lots of room left on the wall.
Yeah. Do you remember the caricature lesson we did together?
Yes. I do, and okay, the recording cut off just at the very end, and we were saying, I was saying how much I appreciate you being on. It was good to see you again, and is there anything else you want to plug that's coming up?
No, thanks for having me. Follow me on Facebook, Michelle Ferrari. Michelle Livin Show is coming back.
Cool.
So stay tuned for that.
When is that one? Do you know yet, or?
I do, but I can't release it yet because we're just waiting to confirm that in the next couple of weeks.
Gotcha.
But there won't be as many, so there will be a lot more. It will be a lot more exclusive.
Okay,
I'm doing
cool.
Less, but bigger versions of the show.
And lots of build up to each one.
Yeah, a little more, a lot more time to work on it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Have
for
a good
me.
One.